Okay. I'm Humayun Kabir from Auckland University Technology, so two from New Zealand, small country. And the idea is that how IFRS has evolved since 2001. And the initial motivation was two papers published in Accounting Horizons, I think back in 2003, one by Professor Schipper and another one in the same issue, another by Professor Nelson, I think. And so basically after the Enron failure, lots of noise in the US specifically, and the US Congress asked the US SEC to do a study on principles-based standards. And then in those two papers, these authors argued that basically probably it's not fair to compare IFRS with US GAAP because US GAAP has been used for a longer time. IFRS at that time has not been mandatorily adopted in any country. I mean, it has been used voluntarily for some companies in this country, Germany, maybe in South Africa. So after 20 years, that especially the European Union adopted 2005, and it has become mandatory in other countries also. So how has IFRS evolved in response to constituent demands? Because now it is being adopted and applied in many countries globally, and there will be questions about applications, guidance, all these things, and ISB will be under pressure to provide all of those kind of guidance. And of course, it has been criticized, IS has been criticized by US SEC because at the time, the IS didn't provide much guidance. So that was the background. So this paper provides a rich set of evidence, archival evidence on how IFRS has evolved, specifically whether IFRS has evolved from a principle-based approach to a rules-based approach. So that is the focus. I mean, one reviewer has asked me to consider also evolution in a greater sense, like whether it has improved usefulness and all these things. So yeah, there are other ways that evolution can be addressed, but this paper focuses on whether IFRS has evolved from a principle-based approach to a rules-based approach. And ISB, the first ISB chair, Sir David Tweedy, emphatically mentioned this one in the US Congress testimony as, I think, one of the most important attribute of IFRS, and it offers advantages over US GAAP. And the foundation constitution also confirms this commitment to principle-based approach. Now, what is the principle-based approach? It's the approach under which the standardizer focuses on specifying the principles or objectives using the US SEC terminology, and then provides guidance to operationalize it and to implement it. So that's the approach. And principle-based standards is the outcome of this approach, but over time, even if the ISB or any other standard setter uses this approach, follows this approach, it may become rules-based over time. So that's the approach in this paper. Now, why it matters? Of course, the principle-based approach is suitable for the ISB because it's applied in multiple jurisdictions which have different legal and business systems and pre-IFRS accounting traditions. And this is a very fundamental feature of IFRS. And any change in this approach may dent the credibility of the standard setter because ISB does not have any legal mandate to impose its standards on other countries. So it has to depend on the voluntary acceptance of IFRS, for its legitimacy and the legitimacy of IFRS. Now, a recent paper published just last year reported that US GAAP has become more principle-based over time, and IFRS has become more rules-based over time, and the gap between IFRS and US GAAP has closed the gap. I mean, it still does gap. But this question, I mean, this result focuses on the standards that have been issued, but it begs the question whether IFRS has transformed from the principle-based approach to a rules-based approach. Now, the theoretical lenses here, I tried to understand this evolution using three concepts. The first one is path dependence theory. It has been used in the evolution of economic institutions and laws. Most famous is the Professor Douglas North. The argument is that changes in law follow a path. That means when a path has been set, basically future changes in law and economic institutions follow that path. So that's the path dependence theory, has been widely used in the history of economic evolution. And then another one is bounded rationality concept, by the Professor Howard Simon and then Professor Oliver Williamson. They use that bounded rationality because humans are boundedly rational. So how it applies to the strength setter, because the strength setter cannot anticipate all the eventualities, and they cannot, even if they try to provide accounting rules for each eventuality, it is not simply not possible. So that's the boundary. And another one is earnings management literature, because no matter how you set the standards, managers are going to manipulate it. I mean, but the types of manipulation differs on the type of standards. So once the ISB has adopted this approach, then what happened that because the pre-IFRS accounting traditions was different in different countries. So first of all, we have seen that European countries have invested heavily to develop its enforcement mechanisms, changes, auditing, and all this in reform, all these things, institutional things. And then auditors also invested heavily to develop guidance on all these things, how to apply this IFRS. So as ISB adopts this approach in future successive IFRS, when they write the standards, then there's this expectation on the part of the stakeholders, ISB constituents, that ISB will continue to do so. So it becomes path dependent. And if they change it, then it will dent their credibility. That's why ISB is going to follow the path dependent, the principle-based approach. Now, when it comes to guidance, when the ISB, because of boundary, the ISB cannot provide all the guidances because it cannot anticipate all the eventualities. Now, once they issue the standard first time, then, and it's applied, then preparers start to understand its limitations and all these things, and they post questions for the ISB or the interpretations committee, and then the boundary rationality constraint is relaxed, and the ISB thinks, or interpretation committee thinks, what to do. Now, they have three choices according to the due process document. First thing is the IF interpretations committee may say, no, we are not going to do anything. So that's called agenda decisions, actually. They provide some explanatory materials. They can develop, the second choice is to they can develop interpretations. And the third one is they can refer it to the ISB to look into it, either making amendments or doing research on it, or maybe, look at it as part of the post-implementation review. So these are the four research questions. The first one is, do successive IFRS preserve the principle-based nature of IFRS? And then second one is, do interpretations committee and ISB issue new interpretations and the guidance respectively when the application questions can be addressed by referring to the extent to IFRS requirements? So the underlying idea of RQ2, the research question two, because ISB follows an intermediate approach. USSEC has discussed three approaches. One is purely rules-based, and the one is purely principles only. These are two extremes on the continuum. And in the middle, you have a mix of both elements, that you have provide the principles or objectives, and then provide some guidance. And what ISB does also, they have the IS8, which provides guidance on for the preparers how to handle transitions event that are not covered by in extant IFRS. So this IS-8, so this is based on conceptual framework, based on the analogy. So that's the second research question, how they do it. Number three, when does the ISB amend IFRS? And number four, do amendments result in more guidance? Now the sample, all IFRS accounting standards that have been issued, 214 agenda decisions issued between 2007 to 2022 is the cutoff date. And 62 amendment documents comprising 55 individual amendments and 7 improvements, annual improvements documents within during the same time period. Why 2007? Because that's the last year that ISB publishes all the amendments on its page. So that's why 2007 onwards, 2022. Agenda decisions are also available before 2007, but for comparison purposes, I limited it 2007 to 2022. And then 7 implementation reviews. So before providing evidence on the 4 questions, so here's the RBC's course, rules-based continuum course, widely used in studies, principle-based studies, rules-based studies that so RBC is captures 4 components of rule-based standards. One is the Breitling thresholds, and the one is exceptions, and the one is guidance, and the one is detail. So these 4 components of or attributes of rule-based standards is captured. So basically, they add 1, 1, 1, and 4. So maximum is 4, or minimum is 0. So if it is higher, then it's more rules-based. So you can see that from, so I calculated for 4 years. 2001 is the first year. 2005, I calculated because they have the first constitution review in 2005, and there are a lot of allegations, you can say, against the ISB that ISB didn't listen too much to the constituents, and it was, the constitution was first reviewed in 2005, and due process was strengthened. In 2010, the first board was almost replaced. So we have a change in a board membership after that. And 2002 is the last study year. And you can see here that it increased from 1.47. So there's a decline in 1.37 in 2005, but it's increased again from 1.37 to 1.54 to 1.62. So it becomes more rules-based. But the thing is, it's not statistically significant, okay? Now, the limitation of this test is that, of course, it's a univariate test, it's not a multivariate test. Now, having this one, now, the RQ1, the first thing is the successive ISB chairs, 3 chairs we have expressed their commitment to the principle-based standards, all the chairs, right? Either in testimonies to the US Congress, or in interviews which have been published in Journal of International Financial Management and Accounting, expressed their commitment to the principle-based approach. Now, and this commitment has been reflected in how the IFRS is written. So I provide evidence here from three different types of evidence. First one is standard, in issuing a standard in which there is no previous standard. So IFRS 2, which addresses share-based payment, it provides the principle that all share-based payments shall be measured and expensed, or maybe treated as asset, and must be measured at fair value. That's the principle. And then ISB provides some guidance, but it acknowledges that you can see that there may be features of amplistic option that it has not considered, and abstains from providing extensive guidance, application, AG means application guidance, because the guidance could become outdated if new features are developed. So that's the traditional argument for principle-based, and they did it. And the second example is IFRS 3, which replaced an existing standard IS-22. And IS-22 provided alternatives for business combinations. One is, of course, purchase method, and the other one is uniting of interest methods, or you can say pooling method. And IFRS 3 abolished that one, and only the acquisition method, first purchase method, and the acquisition method. So there is no alternatives there, no exceptions there. And then number 3 evidence is the disclosure. the ISB has, especially when the, if you look at IFRS and IS, IS just listed the disclosure items, what you need to disclose. But IFRS is written in the disclosure, they first put the disclosure objective, and then they say, okay, if you want to achieve this disclosure, this is a list. And that list provides as a guidance only. So, and more recently, ISB has strengthened its approach. They have disclosed, published a document, how they are going to write disclosure requirements in future IFRS. Despite the maintenance of principles approach, the IFRS has increased in length, okay? And I compared here 8 IFRS that replaced the previous IS, like IFRS 3 replaced IS 2, 22. Then we have IFRS 15 replaced 18, IS 18 and 11. So those 8 IFRS, and you can see that the second bullet, the total length of 8 IFRS increased by 236.47%. So basically, the new IFRS is 254,870 words, and previously it was 75,749 words. And most of this increase came from increases in guidance. Now, in this paper, guidance is taken to comprise of, first thing is application guidance, implementation guidance, illustrative examples, and interpretations. So most of this increase, and IFRS 9 represents the extreme case, encompassing 89,339 words in guidance. And in 2001, the IS 39 had no guidance, right? Now, what are the reasons? Four potential reasons is, first one is the ISB's attempt to address the concerns of powerful constituent like the US SEC. And second thing is, you need guidance to apply the principles, and that's consistent with the principle-based approach. Second thing is convergence with the US GAAP, that is the finding of Lane et al. And of course, complexity of transition, which is for financial instruments, right? Yet, there are concerns about so much guidance, even if it is consistent with the principle-based approach. One very early paper in 1991 published in Accounting Horizons, and there is the possibility of decreasing returns to details in accounting standards. Now, number two, the number of agenda decisions, 214. And you can see the amendment documents is 62. And it also tells you that, because agenda decision means the ISB doesn't, sorry, Interpretations Committee doesn't issue any interpretation, right? They ask the preparers to look at this area. They indicate that where in the IFRS you need to look at. So so you can see that ISB tend to, ISB or IFRS, Interpretations Committee, tend to reject requests for further guidance. I mean, they stick to it. And of course, the Constitution and the due process document clearly says that when you issue guidance or all these things, you need to balance between these two needs, right? Now, the most common reason, in third bullet, you can see it, 132, cited for the ISB for not including the submitter's request that the IFRS already includes adequate guidance. So IFRS Interpretation Committee normally refrain from providing very specific guidance in this kind of agenda decision, but there are some situations where it provides very specific guidance. Now, in the post-implementation review, 7 post-implementation review, what I have seen that most of the cases, they reject the request for additional guidance. So one example is IFRS 13, where the ISB has been asked to provide more guidance on what does active market means, and ISB said, no, we cannot do that. I mean, because the practice will develop and already you have the principle, right? That is another thing. But sometimes they undertake research as the current project, ISB project on goodwill business combination and disclosure, it came from the post-implementation review of IFRS 3. And sometimes they provide, they amend documents like that, the definition of business, and that also came from IFRS 3 PIR in 2014, and they amended the definition of business in IFRS 3 and provided more guidance in application guidance in IFRS 3. And number three is the reasons for amendments. You can see the unclear requirements, gaps. These are two major requirements. Onerous, difficult requirements, diversity in practice, but there is some overlap there, inconsistency between IFRS requirements and the convergence so 145. Now, so just a couple of examples for unclear requirements is IS-38. You can see that is with intangible assets that there was request from constituents that, I mean, the principle that amortization or depreciation in IS-16, that it will reflect the consumption pattern, it is not clear. So basically, they are asking for guidance for concession service arrangements under IFRIC 12, and then they provided the guidance. That is one. And another one is that from PR of IFRS 3, that for the business definition that I just discussed. Therefore, the gaps in IFRS that in IS 21, this portrait shall be used for converting foreign currency transactions into functional currency, and they said, okay, especially when there's a credit transactions, which debt they should use. So ISB provided some guidance. They said that it doesn't address IS 21. There's a gap there. And sometimes ISB also sometimes provide disclosure requirements in response to the constituent requests, but they have the disclosure objectives there in the standard, like in IFRS 8. The specific requirement for disclosing the judgments the entity used when applying the aggregation criteria for operating segments in IFRS 8. So there's a disclosure objectives there in IFRS 8. And also in IS 1 also, they have another requirement that you need to provide all the judgments, estimates, all these things. And but still, they provided these very specific disclosure requirements. So number four, impacts of amendments. You can see, so here I calculated the paragraphs, number of paragraphs, added, amended, deleted, and then increase, added, minus, deleted. And you can see in the last paragraph, so IFRS in the main body increased by 210 paragraphs, and then transition is the highest, 212, because whenever they amend any standard, then they provide transition and effective date. So that's why you have the 2N highest number. But if you look at there, most of the increase came in guidance, illustrative examples, 147 paragraphs, application guidance, 112, and interpretations, 102, and implementation guidance in 8. So most of the increase is there. Now, for appreciating these changes, I compared it with IFRS 9 when they issued it first in a full length, because IFRS 9 has been issued in multiple stages, three stages. So in 2015, when the full IFRS was completed, they have 150 paragraphs in the main body, 35 in the effective date, 390 in AG, 147 in illustrative example. So that's pretty much the same length that because of these amendments. And these amendments also added new exceptions. Two well-known exceptions are the exception from liability classification under IS-39 for putable instruments. And one well-known scope exception in IFRS 10 is the exception given for investment entities. And the summary is that basically the conclusion is that yes, it maintains its principle-based approach, but it's still there's increase in length, and most of this increase is in guidance and also in exceptions also. Thank you.